This Is Your Life, episode 30.
This is your life.
Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we'll be talking about 9 rules for leading more productive meetings. And again, I'm going to share with you from my experience. I've attended hundreds of meetings, maybe a few thousand by now. I've led a few hundred more, but to be honest, most meetings seem like they're a waste of time, don't they? There have been some notable exceptions along the way, and I want to talk about what made those meetings different. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Bluehost Web Hosting. It's the only web hosting service I personally recommend. Why? Because it's easy to use, reliable, and inexpensive. It's also the official top recommendation of WordPress itself. Not sure how to set it up? No problem. I've got a free step-by-step screencast, though, to walk you through the process of setting up your very own self-hosted WordPress blog. And you don't have to have any technical expertise, I promise. You can do it in 20 minutes or less, and you can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. And on that page, I'll also provide you with a link to get a special rate, a hosting account for only $3.95 a month, which is a special discount that Bluehost offers to my blog readers and podcast listeners. But you've got to go to that page, to michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup, and click through on the link to be able to get that special deal. So let's talk about 9 rules for leading more productive meetings. A while back, I attended an all-day meeting that was very productive. It was long. We were tired at the end of the process, but we accomplished what we set out to do. We made some significant decisions, we established accountabilities, and we left the meeting knowing exactly what was expected of us. And I think everyone felt the meeting was a good use of their time. Well, unfortunately, too many organizational meetings don't go this well. I mean, you've been in those meetings, I've sat in those meetings where we feel like it was a total waste of time, that it could have been handled through email, or maybe the meeting didn't have to happen at all, but we killed a bunch of time. Meanwhile, the work was stacking up back at our office as we were attending the meeting. And I want to get beyond that. And I think the good news is that meetings can be substantially improved by observing a few simple rules. This is not rocket surgery, as they say, but it's fairly simple if we pay attention to the rules. And this is something we can get better at with a little practice. So here's my list of 9 rules for more productive meetings. And let's just dive right in. Rule number one, and this is where it really starts, be fully engaged. And by that, I mean the following. Be energetic. The most important thing you bring to any meeting, really to any encounter with anyone, is your energy. Your energy level impacts others, just like a boat leave a wake behind them, and you as a leader leave a wake behind you. So you've got to be intentional about your energy. Choose the attitude. Choose the energy that best serves your purpose. And I'm not suggesting that every meeting needs to be, you know, an up, rah-rah kind of motivational meeting. It doesn't. There are different meetings. They require different kinds of energy. For example, a meeting where you're going to have to make some hard decisions about staff reductions, you know, that is not a rah-rah meeting, but that doesn't mean you can't be intentional about the energy you bring to the meeting so that you empower people and not leave them discouraged and feeling terrible about the whole experience. Or what about a meeting where you're planning your annual fundraiser? You know, that's another kind of meeting that requires a different kind of energy. Or a meeting where you're announcing the sale of your company, which for a lot of people could be a very negative thing. For others, it might be a very positive thing. But regardless, you've got to be intentional about the energy you bring. And to this point, you may want to review my podcast episode 24, where I talk about how to become a happy person that others want to be around. And then a blog post that I wrote called 3 Actions You Can Take Now to Shift Your Emotional State. And those links to both of those will be in the show notes. Another aspect of being fully engaged is to just come prepared. Read the background material that was circulated before the meeting. Have your assignments complete. Review the outcome and review the agenda. And then when you get to the meeting, focus your attention. This is one of the reasons why many meetings are so inefficient, but make sure you don't take phone calls during the meeting. I mean, ever, really? unless it's something that's truly an emergency. And I just have never been in a meeting where an emergency happened. It's very rare for that to happen, but don't take phone calls. Do not, whatever you do, don't check email, especially as a leader. That totally sends the wrong message that you're disengaged. Take notes. Even if you got somebody there who's in the capacity of an official minute taker, take notes yourself. It focuses your attention. It helps you process what is being said, and it enables you to follow up later. And realize that you're modeling. Recognize that. People are going to take their cues from you. If you're distracted and disengaged, your people will be too. If you're focused and engaged, your people will be too. It's really a case of follow the leader. So be intentional about your leadership. Rule one, be fully engaged. Rule number two for having a more productive meeting is to establish hard edges. What do I mean by hard edges? Good meetings start and end on time. When you start late, you inadvertently penalize the punctual and you reward the tardy. And this only makes the problem worse than better. People get trained to become late or to come late because they know that nothing significant is going to happen until well after the announced start time. So make sure that you start right on time. You'll train your people, you'll train yourself, and you'll send an important message through your organization when you do that. But also make sure you finish on time. Look, when you finish late, you also frustrate participants. People are busy. Meetings that finish late cascade into other meetings, which must then also start late. And instead, you've got to be disciplined about your ending time as well as your beginning time. And it's amazing how much you can cover if you know you absolutely, positively have to finish on time. So rule number two is to establish hard edges. Rule number three for leading more productive meetings is to create an agenda. I personally believe that no meeting should proceed without a written agenda. If it's not important enough to create a written agenda, then it's probably not important enough to attend. And leaders have got to set an example here. And I'm not talking about informal meetings where you get together with friends or associates for a meal or for coffee. You know, those don't have to be, you know, so structured. But I'm talking about any other kind of business meeting where you intend to accomplish something. And you need to think about the topics that you're going to cover and how the meeting should flow. And I always like to start the meeting with a review of the minutes from the previous meeting, particularly if it's a standing meeting. And I'll talk more about this in a minute. But I like every meeting also to end with two items, a review of the agreed upon action items, and then setting or confirming the date for the next meeting. And agendas should always be circulated in advance of the meeting so that people know what to expect and how to prepare. There's really no excuse for this, but people ought to get the agenda in ahead of the meeting via email. And I would just suggest also that you create meeting templates for your standing meetings. Why keep reinventing the wheel? If you find that a certain sequence works or certain topics that you want to cover every time, go ahead and commit that to a Word document template or a Pages document template, but something where you can at least start from a baseline and you can always add an ad lib on that, but start with a template. So rule number three is to create an agenda. Rule number four is state the desired outcome. This, frankly, is very rare. I don't know a lot of people that do this, but if you're a leader and you want to have more productive meetings, this is a great way to do that. It's important to know exactly what outcome you want from the meeting. If you don't know where you're going, how are you going to know when you've arrived? And I would suggest that you state the desired outcome in the meeting invitation and then restate it as you begin the meeting, and you might even put it at the top of the agenda. For example, something like this, and these are actual outcomes that I've written and included in agendas in the past. The purpose of our meeting is to report on the results of our latest market research and give you a chance to ask questions. Here's another one. The purpose of our meeting is to evaluate prospective titles for John Maxwell's new book and decide which one we're going to recommend to him. Another possible outcome. The purpose of our meeting is to review the company's Q3 operating results and provide a progress report on our five strategic initiatives. So by stating the outcome, the participants can work together to achieve it and keep the meeting from wandering off track. And if you have a clear outcome, it really will keep you from chasing rabbits. You'll be able to bring it back because you've got an outcome that you're after for that particular meeting. So rule number four, state the desired outcome. Rule number five, lead the conversation. This should be obvious, but good conversations don't just happen. They are caused. That means they require someone, and that would be you, to direct them. And this doesn't require a battalion commander barking out orders, but it requires more than a detached and impartial judge. Meeting facilitators, in my view, should think of themselves, you should think of yourself, as a symphony conductor. You've got a baton, not a bat. You've got a score, which is your agenda. And your responsibility is to call up the various instruments at the required time. And this means dialing some people down who perhaps want to dominate the conversation or talk too much. It requires pulling some people out who might, left to themselves, just be quiet the entire meeting and be passive observers. But your effectiveness as a leader of a meeting, I believe, is measured in the music that your team produces, just like a symphony conductor. And that's the right metaphor in my view. And I would also, as you lead this conversation, insist on one conversation. I learned this from my friend, Lucy Swindoll. Gail and I went to a dinner party at her home several years ago. And she said at the outset of the dinner meeting, she said, "Hey, you know, I'm so delighted to have you all here, but I really like to ask that we have one conversation, not several conversations, because I want to hear from all of you. And I want all of us to participate in this conversation." It was an amazing evening because she did that. And it's something that takes some training, not only of yourself as the team leader, but also of your people. But don't permit side conversations. And this so often derails a meeting. It's distracting to everybody else, but just don't permit it. And don't allow others to talk too much. And this can sometimes be difficult. I don't want to publicly humiliate somebody or embarrass them. It may require that you go to them individually and talk to them and ask them, for the sake of the process and for the benefit of everyone, that they dial it back a little bit and let other participants contribute. And then don't chase rabbits. And I know sometimes rabbit trails can be productive. So this is a little bit of an art, not a science. And you might want to let the rabbit run for just a little bit, but keep a parking lot on a whiteboard or a chalkboard where you can park ideas that aren't part of the agenda, but you don't want to lose either. You want to get back to them later. So this whole thing of leading the conversation takes practice, but I think that's one of our primary roles as leaders, is to develop the art of leading productive, meaningful, consequential conversations. And again, like everything else, we have to be intentional about it. So that's rule number 5, lead the conversation. Rule number 6 is review the minutes and the action items. The first thing I do in any meeting is to review the minutes and the action items from the previous meeting. This gives the participants context, and it also gives those that were absent an opportunity to get up to speed. You may also want to get a progress report on each action item for the person responsible for it. And if you make a habit of always doing this, people will soon learn that you expect them to complete their assignments. I mean, how many times have you gone to a meeting, there have been things assigned, tasks assigned, and then there's no follow-up? And, you know, it's like the meeting was a total waste of time because nothing ever really comes of it. I really believe that what gets inspected is what gets done, and you've got to provide a venue for accountability, and this is a great way to do it. But if people have to give an account in front of their peers, so much the better. This may give them the added incentive to complete their assignments so they're not embarrassed in front of their colleagues. But if people don't have their assignments done, I would ask them right there for a revised deadline. You don't have to embarrass them. You don't have to humiliate them. You don't have to make a big deal about it, but just ask them for a revised deadline and enter those into the minutes and be sure and follow up at the next meeting. And when you do this and make it a practice and it becomes part of your culture, you really can create a culture of accountability where people understand that they must get their assignments done before they come to the next meeting. And it begins with you making sure that you have your action assignments done as well. So that's rule number 6, review the minutes and the action items. Rule number 7, take written minutes. Now, I also already said that you as the leader need to be taking notes, but someone should also be taking formal minutes, particularly if this is an important meeting, if it's a standing meeting, even if the meeting only has 2 participants, assuming again, this isn't an informal meeting. But I do not recommend that detailed notes that chronicle the discussion be taken as it unfolds. These are frankly too cumbersome to take, and they're too cumbersome to review. They're almost always unnecessary. And as I learned when I was running a public company, when Thomas Nelson was a public company, from the legal perspective, you don't necessarily want to have that much detail. It can get you in trouble later. In most meetings, recording the key decisions, and this is the important thing, and the action items are sufficient. That's all you really need to record. You want to record the decision so there's no misunderstanding later. You also want to document the action items so that you can hold people accountable and you can track the progress. And beyond that, you're probably just engaging in busy work. I would also suggest that you distribute the minutes as soon after the meeting as you can, so the participants can review the key items while they're fresh in their memory, as well as review what is expected of them and get started on making progress against those action items. I'd also recommend distributing the items when you send out the agenda for the next meeting. Also very helpful. So rule number 7 is to take written minutes. Rule number 8, clarify action items. At the end of the meeting, the person recording the minutes should read off the action items. And I recommend that these be stated in a specific format. And here's what they are. There's actually 4 parts to this. Part number 1, state each action item with a verb. For example, review Milford contract with the agent, or call Jim and get the latest turnover stats. But start with the verb. Part 2, specify the deliverable. What exactly do you expect the person completing the action to do? It's got to be an observable behavior with a specific endpoint. And it may be a phone call. It could be a written report. It could be a setting of an appointment. It could be a presentation. It should not be a process. It should be a specific observable behavior with a specific endpoint. Part 3, assign a single owner to each action. No action should have more than one owner. And I'll tell you, if you establish more than one owner for each action, you're always going to be in a finger-pointing mode, or you're not going to be sure who to hold accountable. But I think you want one person to blame if the action isn't completed. So give each project a single owner. Part 4 is agree on a due date. Get a commitment from the person responsible. And I don't usually volunteer this, you know, unless it's really like mission critical. But I ask them what would be realistic, and then I put it in writing. I put it down, actually make this as a part of the action plan. I think Dave Ramsey says this. Somebody says this. It's a great quote. And that is that a goal without a deadline is simply a dream. So you want a deadline. You want a due date next to each action item. And this is a commitment, frankly, and it needs to be treated as such. So those 4 parts of Rule 8 clarify action items. Rule number 9 is determine the next meeting date. I mean, this is pretty easy, but this is easiest to do when everybody's together at the meeting. And I would encourage people to bring their calendars to the meeting, whether it's on their iPhone or their iPad or their BlackBerry or their laptop or whatever it is, but bring with them their calendar so that you can coordinate calendars while you're all together and not leave the scene of that meeting until you've established the next meeting date. And, you know, I mean, if the meeting disperses without setting the next date, it makes it that much harder to schedule the next time together. So take advantage of everyone being in one place to get this settled. It's one less thing you've got to do later. So look, improving the quality of meetings takes work. I'd be the first to acknowledge that. They don't get better or more productive on their own. And every once in a while, we need to step back from the meeting itself or the meetings that we're engaged in and ask, how can we make our time together more productive? The last thing you want as a leader is your people grumbling about what a waste of time the meetings you hold are. You want those to be positive, productive. You want people to be left empowered and knowing exactly what you're requiring of them. So meetings consume a lot of resources, and the more efficient they are, the better the return on our investment. So with that, let's go to a few listener questions. I have several this week on this particular topic. The first one comes from Chris.
Hi, Michael. This is Chris Pallon from Olympia, Washington. My blog can be found at thadrenaline.com. My question today is, my team is spread out through an entire state, so most of my meetings are conducted via conference call. Do you have any suggestions on how I can make these times more productive and collaborative while still getting engagement from the entire group? Thanks, Michael, for all that you continue to do, and I look forward to your thoughts.
Chris, first of all, love the name of your blog. Very creative. Awesome. I would say I would probably have my team actually listen to this podcast. I mean, I know that sounds perhaps a little bit self-serving, but I would kind of have an agreed upon standard or something that you're aiming for as a group to make these meetings more productive. And then I would talk together through the issues that you're facing in a conference call or a teleseminar situation that make it a little bit different. But certainly, I have several meetings like this every month, several boards and organizations that meet via conference call, and this is required of us, and it's, you know, they work fine. But I think we have to be very intentional about it, and we have to do all the things that I suggested above and run it as though we were face to face. Now, I'm not a big fan of video conferencing, and I know some people love that. It does create a little accountability because you can't be, you know, mindlessly doing something else and distracted because everybody's watching you. But having said that, I don't think it really adds anything. And in fact, I think it's a little bit distracting. So maybe I just haven't gotten used to it, but I would stick to just a phone conference and run the meeting as though you were present, and just in your own mind, don't make it a huge hurdle or make it an obstacle, but believe that you can do it and hold up as productive a meeting via conference as you could if you were face to face. The next question comes from Eric.
Hi, Michael. This is Eric Rehm at ericrehm.com, ericrehm. My question is getting the most out of meetings that you attend. How do you define whether or not you need to even go to a meeting? There's some meetings I get asked to go to that I don't even think I need to be there. And how can I get out of going to meetings that I should not attend and maintain the relationship in the process? Thank you.
Well, I think it starts by having a clear set of priorities yourself and a clear set of objectives and work deliverables that you're focused on. And then you've got to ask yourself the question, does this help me move the ball down the field for what I'm being asked to do or what I'm being required to do? And obviously there are meetings where we have no discretion. Our boss has called the meeting and we don't really have a choice, but it could be a colleague that called the meeting and is just wasting our time. And I find that in corporations so often, people call meetings because they're afraid to make the decision themselves. They just kind of want to share the blame and make it a part of a groupthink effort so that they don't have to take responsibility for making the hard decision that somebody really could be doing on their own. So I would just, you know, try to discern what's going on there. And then sometimes you just have to have an honest conversation with the person who's organizing it. I mean, this could even be your boss. And as long as you're respectful and as long as you reframe it in terms of how to get the boss what he or she is really after, and not just you complaining about a meeting or being somebody that's difficult to get along with, I think you can sell it. And so I would start there. Try to find out the intention and ask if there's not a better way to do it. And I don't find too many people that actually love meetings and just want to hold meetings to be holding meetings. They're probably wide open to other suggestions, and it may be up to you to make those suggestions. So I would be bold. And then I think also you've got to just get better at saying no. And this is something that I'm working on all the time because I'm asked to be in meetings all the time. And I find that I have to say no and that I get better with practice, but I have to keep going back to that basic skill. If you're going to accomplish anything of importance, you've got to get really good at saying no and being able to say it with grace. And I've got a podcast on that. I've also got a couple of articles that I've written on my blog on that. But if you want to, you know, kind of bone up on that and think through it, then go back through that content, and I'll have some links in the show notes for you. The next question comes from Jason.
Hello, Michael. My name is Jason Feltner. I'm Vice President of Allied Equipment in Odessa, Texas. I blog on leadership and productivity at jasonfeltner.com. As a vice president, I struggle with leading a meeting and keeping notes at the same time. I've tried many different mediums, such as laptops, iPads, and most recently a Moleskine. I was wondering, what medium do you prefer for your style of note-taking, annotation, and review to get the most out of a meeting while still being able to lead it? Thank you for your input.
Jason, thank you for pronouncing Moleskine correctly. So many people refer to those as moleskin notebooks, but it actually is Moleskine. Look it up, Google it if you're listening to this and not convinced. But that's what I use, actually. And I've tried, I think, everything like you have. And I'm on the perpetual search to find the best application I can find. And I'm always trying to find shortcuts and make it more efficient. But for me, just writing my notes in a Moleskine notebook is the easiest thing to do. It's kind of got that perfect balance of keeping me focused without keeping me distracted by the technology or trying to get it to work in the middle of the meeting, which always seems to be happening. I'm always making mistakes when I'm trying to type on my iPad or whatever. And I may change this. I mean, if you're in a meeting with me in a couple of weeks, I may be doing something else. But for right now, that's what I'm using. I find that the best system. And I've got an article that's on my blog. I'll put a link in the show notes to this. But it's called The Lost Art of Note-Taking. And I'll explain in that post my particular symbols and how I do it. And I've got kind of a system that I use, a workflow that I use for taking notes in meetings. John has the next question.
Hi, Michael. This is John Wilkerson from the Wired Homeschool over at thewiredhomeschool.com. And in my day job, I occasionally have to attend meetings. And a lot of times in those meetings that I go to, my portion that I'm contributing to the meeting is way down at the bottom, or anything that applies is way down at the bottom of the list. And really, I only need to be there for about 5 minutes, but I'm stuck in a meeting for 60 to 90 minutes. How do I get the most out of a situation like that, where I really feel like this could have been communicated by email, but I'm required to be at the meeting? Thanks for everything that you do. Thanks for your podcast and your blog. And I hope to hear your answer.
John, that's a great question. All of us have been stuck in that exact situation before. And I mean, it's just a colossal waste of time because you don't want to be distracted. You don't want to be doing something else while you should be listening attentively and communicating disrespect to the other people who are presenting. But I think this is a case where you have to go to your boss, or you have to go to the meeting organizer, and you have to explain the situation. And you've got to do it in terms of what their goals are. And if it's your boss, I think just saying to him or her, look, there's a lot of things that I could be doing with my time besides sitting in this meeting, and particularly moving us toward the goals that you, Mr. Boss or Mrs. Boss, have set for us. And I want to make sure that I get my work done. And I just wonder if we could structure this so I could come in at the end of the meeting or near the end of the meeting. I can be on call, and if the meeting's running ahead of time or behind, you know, I can flex with that. But I wonder if we could just come in for our portion of it. And I've run many meetings like that myself personally, where we scheduled people to appear for a specific segment, and we just kind of put them on call and told them we'd like to block out a half hour session. And then we would just, you know, give them a call right before we needed them to appear. And that seemed to work pretty well. So I think it's just, you know, it's a problem to be solved. It's going to happen. There are meetings like that where it may be relevant to five people, but then there are 30 people parading in one after another, like we used to do at Thomas Nelson in divisional meetings. And it's only relevant for a very short time to most of the participants. And the key is to schedule it and have an understanding and keep striving for efficiency. The next question comes from Ryan.
Hey, Michael, this is Ryan from RyanKParker.com. And thank you so much for taking my question. Next week, I start a new job, and I know the executive director has already scheduled a meeting for our staff to kind of voice their concerns of what they have going on with our current program. I was curious if there's a way for us to structure it so it's helpful for everyone and it doesn't just turn into one long gripe session. So any help would be much appreciated, and thanks again. Have a wonderful day.
Ryan, this is all about how you frame the meeting to begin with. And I think that when you get people together, if you don't do it beforehand, state what your outcome is. I mean, it's not just a gripe session. You don't want people just to get stuff off their chest and then, you know, go off to their respective jobs. But you want it to have, I would think, a more productive end than that, a more positive end than that. So I would start by stating the purpose of the meeting and the outcome that you're after. And then I would give people permission to gripe, but tell them that you're not going to allow them, and you're not going to allow yourself, to let it end at griping, so that every gripe has got to get refocused in the meeting on a solution or toward an action that will resolve the issue. It's important for people to feel like they're heard. And so I would let them gripe, and then I would gently turn that towards a positive resolution. You know, what can you do about it as a result of that? And I think if you'll do that, keep an overall positive outcome in mind, and if you'll be steering the conversation, actually leading the conversation in the midst of it so that it doesn't end with a gripe, then I think you'll end up with a positive overall experience. Now, don't be surprised if there's an organization where people complain in the past and nothing gets done, if they're not a little cynical. And if that's the case, you may just need to address that up front as well. Say, you know, if you're feeling a little cynical as we start this meeting, I totally get that. I've been in organizations where I was cynical about the outcomes because things were shared and then nothing was ever done. No action was taken. And so I just want us to try to turn that and be more than cynical, be solution oriented so that we can actually improve the situation for ourselves and for our company. So, you know, I just try to treat people as adults and say out loud sometimes what, everybody's thinking, but everyone is also afraid to say. So just go ahead and say it. Go ahead and get it out there so it can be addressed. The next question comes from Scott.
Hi, Michael. This is Scott Reynolds. I don't have a platform set up yet, but I am working on it. I do have some questions about meetings, and specifically, how do you take good notes in a meeting? I'm pretty good at capturing things like tasks with a box and the task next to it, but as far as capturing information, I feel like I either take too many notes or not enough, and I get back to my desk and they look like a bunch of chicken scratches to me and they're not very useful. And then the kind of a second question, Michael, is how do you use those notes after the meeting? Do you have a way of cataloging them so you can get back to this information when you need it? Boy, any assistance you have on either one of those would be great. Hey, love your podcast and love what you do. Thanks for helping us out, Michael.
Scott, I think I said earlier in the podcast, but let me just restate it in case it wasn't clear. I do not take detailed notes. I don't take, you know, what the flow of the conversation was, who said this, who said that. To me, I find that distracting and I find it useless later. Instead, what I record are two things. I record the decisions that we made and the actions that we've decided to take. That's what I want a record of. And then what I do after the meeting is I go back and I process those. The items that were to-do items end up going in a task processor. And currently I'm using Nosby, but I put them in there so that they're either awaiting for item that's delegated to somebody else, and I'm tracking it by putting it with a waiting for label on it or context. And then I take the decisions and I just leave those in the meeting notes. And if it's in my Moleskine notebook, then I'll just go back and refer to those. Usually I can get to those very easily. They're just arranged chronologically by date. If I'm taking notes on the phone, and when I'm in a phone meeting with somebody, I take notes in Evernote. And I just create a separate note that begins with the date of the meeting and then just a subject line that what the meeting was about. And then I record inside of that note, again, the same exact things, the decisions that we've made and the tasks that are required that we follow up on. And then I transfer them later to my task manager. So that's how I do it. It's not very elaborate, but it's pretty simple and it's served me well through the years. The last question comes from Chris.
Hey, Michael, Chris Jube here. Big fan of yours, been for several years. And a while ago, you mentioned a theme specific to michaelhyatt.com, a WordPress theme, and wondering if there's any progress on that. Could you update us on that? Thanks.
Hey, Chris, thanks for asking. I'm getting questions on this every day. I probably announced it too soon. But yes, work is ongoing with that theme. It's called Get Noticed. And it's going to be a WordPress theme based on the WordPress theme that I've got operational on my site right now. But like most projects, you know, you get into them and you find out there are a lot of things that have to be done to convert it and make it easy to use for the users. So Andrew Buckman, who's my partner in that project and has been my web developer for years, is steadily working away as he has time in the background. But we're very close to launching the beta. That's all I can tell you. Like a lot of the big software companies say, you know, real soon now. But we're not making any promises as to when it's going to launch, but I just want you to know we haven't forgotten about it. We're taking it very seriously. And frankly, I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be a great theme for anyone who wants to build a personal brand, anybody who's trying to get noticed. And if you haven't heard about the theme before, it's based on the principles that I set forth in my book, Platform. So those are the voicemail messages that I got about this particular topic. But let me ask you this question. What meeting tips do you have to offer that I haven't covered? I can't imagine that I covered everything, but if you want to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/030, as in episode 30, michaelhyatt.com/030. And one resource I want to mention to you in closing is my tools page. And I've never mentioned this before on the podcast, but I created this in response to the numerous questions I get every week about what hardware, software, and other tools I use to do specific tasks. So I've created one comprehensive resource page with links to all my tools. And if nothing else, it might just stimulate your thinking process and give you some new options. But you can find that at michaelhyatt.com/my-tools. michaelhyatt.com/my-tools. Again, a link in the show notes. The next podcast will be on the topic of my advice to beginning bloggers. This is something I'm dispensing every week as people write in and as call in and they want advice. And I can't do that on a personalized basis, but I'm going to put all my advice for beginning bloggers in the podcast next week. So if you've got a question about blogging and want a chance to get on the show, leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. Podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it just as I did with the callers in this particular episode. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, and scroll down to the comment section. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you?